Okay, today's daf is Makos Daf Gimel. In the excitement of the new Masechta yesterday, I forgot to mention that yesterday's shir, as well as today's shir, is sponsored by Avishai and Elisheva Newman, Lizchus Rufo Shalema, for Chaim Naftali Ben Frimit Freida, as well as for Sarah Freida Baschaya. They should both be Zochet to Rufo Shalema, Besoch Shar, Chole Yisrael. So we left off in Daf Beis and Beis. We're about 10 lines from the end of the page. The last word on the line is Be'eved. We're at Ve'einim Karin, Be'eved Ivri. We were in the middle of going through the list of situations where we don't do kasher zomim lasos liachav. We don't give the edim zomim exactly what they were trying to give to the other person. Rather, they get some other punishment, malchus or whatever. So that we're going through that list. There were two items mentioned in the Mishnah, and then the Gemara had added several other items. We're going to discuss that eid zomim is a knas, and the Gemara is going to bring rayas that eid zomim is a knas. Then on Amud Aleph and Gimel Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to have a comment of Rabbi Yudah Marav that an eid zomim only pays lefi chalko, but that's a very vague statement. What does that mean? He only pays his portion. So we're going to have five different interpretations in the Gemara what that might mean. And then in the small Mishnah and tiny piece of Gemara that follows in Gimel Amud Aleph, the Gemara is going to talk about what if a person is an eid zomim about a ksuba payment. The person says that this man divorced his wife and he hasn't yet paid her ksuba, and it turned out that they were never divorced. How exactly do we evaluate what he tried to be mechayev the husband? The husband eventually would likely have to pay the ksuba if they ever do get divorced, or if he dies before she dies, so there's a decent likelihood that he would have to pay it anyway. So how do we evaluate what the edim are chayev to pay in such a case? Then the next Mishnah is going to discuss a person who testifies that edim that testify that someone owes money now, when in reality he does owe the money, but much, much later. The loan is not due for a long time. How do we evaluate that amount of money? What exactly do the edim have to pay? The Gemara is going to have two different versions, whether Shmuel holds Shemitah cancels a 10-year loan or not, meaning the loan is not going to be due by Shemitah time, and we're going to try to bring a raya one way or the other from our Mishnah, and we're ultimately going to reject that raya. Then we're going to get into the issue of Masnal Mashakasa Batorah. Can a person make a Tanai in general? I'm going to make a loan Almanas that there shouldn't be Shemitah, or there I'll buy something Almanas, or sell you something Almanas, there shouldn't be Ona'ah. Can a person make such conditions, and how does such a condition need to be formulated in order for it to work? And then we're going to discuss how a Milva Bishtar is not due until 30 days after the loan, but a Machlokas about a Milva Bepeh, when you borrow money without writing a Shtar, do we automatically assume a 30-day period before the loan is due? And then at the very end of the daf, the Gemara is going to discuss opening up a hole in a beged in order to be able to use the beged, and opening up a barrel on Shabbos. Is that called tikkun manas, yes, kli, some sort of Shabbos violation? Why are we talking about that? Why are we going to get to there? It happens to be between the Mishnah on Gimel Amud Aleph at the bottom and the Mishnah on Dalet Amud Aleph, the entire Gemara is structured around five different statements that Rav Yehuda has in the name of one of his Rebbeim. Rav Yehuda was a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel, so he's going to have a couple of Chidushim in the name of his Rebbe Shmuel, and then he's going to have three more Chidushim in the name of his Rebbe Rav, so the entire Gemara is could be broken down by Chidushim that Rav Yehuda says in the name of this Rebbe, in the name of that Rebbe, and small sugyas relating to each of those Chidushim, even though they don't necessarily directly, easily relate to each other. So let's begin Ve'einim Karin Be'eved Ivri, 10 lines from the end of the page on Daf Beis Amid Beis. So we had said one of the things that an Eid Zomim does not get Kasher Zomim for when he testifies about an Eved Ivri. We don't sell the Eidim Zomim as an Eved Ivri themselves. Ve'einim Karin Be'eved Ivri. So Sav Rav Amnuna Lameimah, Rav Amnuna initially thought to say, yeah, you know when we don't sell the Eid Zomim as an Eved Ivri? Hanimi Lihecha De Islei Lididei. That's if the guy that they testified that should be sold as an Eved Ivri has money. So he never would have been sold as an Eved Ivri. Meaning they didn't testify that this guy should be sold as an Eved Ivri. They testified this guy owes money. So it happens to be if a person owes money and he doesn't have it, we sell him as an Eved Ivri. But if the guy that they testified against has money, so then you're not going to sell him as an Eved Ivri. The Migo de Ilon is Davin, since that guy never would have gotten sold, he just would have paid it. In Unami Lom is Davnu. They also don't have to be sold, regardless of whether they have money, because they never tried to get the guy sold as an Eved Ivri. Aval Hecha de Lesle Ledidei. But if the guy that they testified against, the guy that they said doesn't, that the guy that they said has stolen, and therefore he doesn't have any money, so he would have been sold as an Eved Ivri. Even though the Edom themselves do have money, and therefore they would never be sold as an Eved Ivri, Mizdavnu, as their punishment, we do sell them as an Eved Ivri. So that was what Rav Hamnuna thought to say, and then the Gemara asks, but Vilemule, why can't the Edom just tell the guy, listen, Iant Havalach, Miav Mizdavnus, if you had money, you never would have been sold as an Eved Ivri. We do have money, so we should only get what we would have gotten had we been the one that were testified against. Meaning, Kasha Zama means that instead of the testimony going against the guy it was supposed to go against, we view it as if their testimony goes against themselves. So if someone would testify that we owe money, we wouldn't be sold, we would just pay it. We would just pay the money. So therefore, we shouldn't have to be sold, even though, had our testimony been accepted, you, Taku, would have been sold as an Eved Ivri. So Ella says, Savra Vamnuna Lemeimar, the way to say the whole conversation is as follows. That Rav Hamnuna thought to say, Hani Milehecha de Islay Olididei, Olididu, that Rav Hamnuna assumed that if either the guy they testify against or the Edom themselves have money, they don't get sold as an Eved Ivri. If the guy they testified against has money, they don't get sold as an Eved Ivri because they never tried to get him sold as an Eved Ivri. If they have money, they don't get sold as an Eved Ivri because people with money don't get sold as an Eved Ivri. They pay the money instead of being sold. But Rav Hamnuna thought that if neither has money, so then we're purely in the discussion is purely about Eved Ivri. It's not about paying. No one has money. So therefore, the Edom Zomim should be sold as an Eved Ivri. And then Amar Le Rava, Rava comes along and says, no, even in that case, you don't get sold as an Eved Ivri. V'nimkar b'gnevaso, Amar Rachmana, b'gnevaso v'lo b'zmamo. That it says, v'nimkar b'gnevaso, the only time you get sold as an Eved Ivri is when you actually did the stealing. If all you did was a sin of Edom Zomim, you don't get sold as an Eved Ivri, gzeras hakasuv. Even if it makes sense, no one has money, of course they would have been sold, doesn't matter. Gzeras hakasuv, only b'gneva so v'lo b'zmamo. So the case where we say that an Eid Zomim doesn't get sold as an Eved Ivri is where he testified that someone stole money, and it doesn't matter what anyone's financial standing is, they don't get sold as an Eved Ivri. What's interesting is when the Rambam quotes this din of Eved Ivri, he writes as follows. In the Rambam in Hilchos Eidus, Perchaf Halachachas, writes, Eidim she'idu al echad vihirshi uhu hare elulokin. They testify that a guy, whatever, that a guy is violated in Aveira, for which he gets Malkus, they get Malkus. He'idu alav shenimkar be'eved ivri v'huzmu lokin. That says the Rambam. If they testify that a guy was sold as an Eved Ivri, and then they turn out to be Edom Zomim, so what they're essentially saying is, you need to be working for somebody because you've already been sold as an Eved Ivri, you don't have your freedom. Then they themselves don't get sold as an Eved Ivri, they only get Malkus. So apparently the Rambam doesn't quote the Din of Har Gemara. The Din of Har Gemara is they testify that the guy stole, not that the guy has already been sold as an Eved Ivri. And the whole Din in Har Gemara was, okay, he stole, would he have been sold? Would the Edom in that position be sold? But it wasn't that they're testifying that he was sold as an Eved Ivri, and yet that's the only din that the Rambam brings. So the Minchas Chinuch explains that the truth is that the Rambam fits very well with the Maskanas HaGemara. You see, in the Havamin of the Gemara, when the Gemara was saying, well, maybe it depends, does this one have money, does that one have money? Yeah, the case where the Edom would get Malkus rather than be sold as an Eved Ivri is Dafka when they testify that someone stole money. But in the Havamin of the Gemara, if they would testify that a guy was taka sold as an Eved Ivri, so then it's pashut that it's about being an Eved Ivri. It's not about money. It's about being so. It's about having the status of an Eved Ivri. Then in a chinami, in the Havamin of the Gemara, the Edom themselves would be an Eved Ivri. But once the Gemara says we have gzeres hakasuv, that the way Eved Ivri works is minimkar b'gnevasov v'lo b'zmamo, that a person can only be sold as never ivri for stealing and not for anything else, not for testifying, not for anything else. So once we have that gzeres hakasov, then even in the case of the Rambam, even when they testify that this guy was sold as never ivri, they're not going to be sold as never ivri. So the Rambam's going the maskanas hagemara and he's saying the greatest chiddush, meaning of course if they only testify that he owes money, they're not going to be sold as never ivri. But even if what they testified is that Itaka was already sold as an Eved Ivri, they're not going to be sold as an Eved Ivri. That is the explanation that Michas Chinuch has for the Shitas HaRambam. The Rishonim are also bothered, you know, by each of these items on the list. Why did our Mishnah only list two? Our Mishnah only listed two cases where you don't get Malkus, and then the Gemara has to add in all these other cases. So it's unclear to me when Rishonim are allowed to ask this question, when they're not. I mean, a lot of times the Mishnayos are not thorough, and they don't list every single example. But I guess when you have an answer, you can ask the question. The Ritva suggests that we're only listing those in the Mishnah. The ones in the Mishnah are ones that are direct. That are directly related to topics in our Masechta. So we dafka talk about Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, we dafka talk about Nir Miklat, because these are things that are nogeah to our Masechta. Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza really nogeah to the end of Sanhedrin, Nir Miklat nogeah to Makos, so it's on topic. When we're on topic, that's what the Mishnah, those are the examples the Mishnah chooses, those examples that are familiar to us. He also suggests it could be that we're only quoting those things that have a certain type of very targeted, specific drasha. But, you know, Begneva So could be a drasha and a million other things. Begneva So is, we happen to darshan over here, Veloba's Mamo, but it's Begneva So, Veloba anything else either. So that's perhaps why we dafka mentioned the ones that have the most targeted drashos. Those are the suggestions that the Ritva has. Now says Gemara Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru, Rabbi Akiva had one final item to add to the list, and that was that they don't have to pay based on their own admission. If two Eidim come to Beis Din and they say, you know what, we were Eidim Zomim about $1,000 loan or something, we were in Eidim Zomim, but they're not going to have to pay. They're not Mishalim Alpi Atzman. So it says more, my time is Rabbi Akiva. Where does Rabbi Akiva get that from? Kasavar Knasahu. Knas in Mishalim Alpi Atzman. He assumes that payments that Eidim Zomim make is a din of a knas, and you never have to pay a knas al piatzma. A person never pays a knas based on his own admission. And says Gemara, Amar Rabba, Teda, I'll prove to you that it's a knas. Shari lo sumaisa v'naragnu mishalmin. Definition of a knas is when the amount of money you pay does not directly correlate to the amount of money you cost somebody. See, if I break your window and I pay for the window, that's not a knas, that's mamon, because there's a clear understanding of why I'm paying that amount of money. It directly relates to the amount of money that I cost you. But a knas is when there's no correlation between the amount of money I paid and the amount, you know, I steal and I pay kefel. So the original, the keren, is the amount of money that I cost you. The kefel, the extra, that's totally extra. That has nothing to do with the amount of money it costs. That's a knas. So there's no greater example of knas than Eidim Zomim, says Rabbah. They didn't cost you anything. You know, the Beis Din had a Gemara Din that they were going to cost you money, but you never actually did it. They never actually cost you the money. If you did, as we said yesterday, kasha zamam velo kasha rasa, that if it already happened, then they don't become Eidim Zomim. So they never actually cost you anything. And they're still going to get killed or have to pay or whatever it is that they tried to do. So that's the very definition of a knas. Amr of Nachman. Rav Nachman says, and I have an additional proof that it's a knas. Teda, shari mamon biad bailim u'mishalmim. The bailim still has their money. They never had to give up their money. And still they have to pay. So Gemara says, wait a second, that's not two different proofs. That's the same thing. You just said the same thing twice. Right? The idea that he never actually did anything, and the idea that the bailim still has their mamon, because they never actually had to pay anything. So says Gemara, yeah, aim of a chen amr of Nachman. We should have reformulated that. It should have said the chenam Rav Nachman, because they know chenami. Rav Nachman is saying exactly the same thing that Rabba had said as the raya that Eidim Zomim is a knas. But be that as it may, we do have a strong raya that Eidim Zomim has a status of knas. Now says the Gemara further. Now Amar Rav Yuda Amar Rav Eid Zomim Mishalim Lefi Chalko. Very cryptic statement. An Eid Zomim pays according to his portion. What does that mean that an Eid Zomim pays according to his portion? My Mishalim Lefi Chalko. The Gemara is going to have five possibilities. Possibility number one, Ile medahay mishalim palga vahay mishalim palga. If you're going to tell me, oh, maybe it means that each guy pays half. That, you know, if two Edom Zomim testify that Reuven owes Shimon $1,000 and they're found to be Zomim, so each aid pays $500. They each pay half of it. Well, Tanina, that can't be what Rav Yudom Rav is teaching me, because that's obvious. We already know this from a Mishnah. Mishalshim b'mamon vein mishalshim b'malkus. The Mishnah is going to teach us that they divide up the monetary payment that they tried to make the guy do, but if it was a malkus, they wouldn't divide it up. Meaning, if two Edom came and testified that the guy's chayv malkus arbaim, we wouldn't give each of them 20 or whatever, you know, it's not arbaim, it's 39, we'll get to that sugya. But we wouldn't divide it up. Each of them would get the full malkus. But by money, yeah, we divide it up. So it's obvious. I wouldn't need an amora, Rav Yudom Rav, to teach me this din. So that can't be what he means, because he doesn't teach me obvious things that are clear in the Mishnah already. Ella must be, he means as follows. Kigon to itzum chad minayu, that let's say only one of the Edom Zomim became an Ed Zomim. The other guy never, there was no one that was ever able to testify, Imanu Isim Makom Ploni, about the other aid. So that's the case where only the one who became an Ed Zomim pays his half of the Edus. The Mishalim Palga Didei, he pays his half. Says Gemara, that's a problem, not because it's obvious, but because it's incorrect. Meaning that can't be what Rabbi Yudom Rav meant, because that's simply not true. Umi Mishalim, would a guy pay if he was the only one that was found to be an Eid Zomim? Vatani ein Eid Zomim Mishalim Mamon, ad sheyazum ushneyem. Eidim Zomim do not pay anything unless they are both found to be Eidim Zomim. So you would not pay in that situation. So the first two attempts at what Rabbi Yudom Rav meant are incorrect. One because it's too obvious, and the other because it's simply not true. The halacha would not be true. So Amar Rava says, here's the case. But Omer Edus Sheker He Aditi. The case is that an aide comes into Beis Din and he says, Edus Sheker He Aditi. Meaning two aidim testify in Beis Din that someone is Chayiv Mamon. There is a Gemar Din that he has to pay. One of the aidim now has regrets. And he says, you know what? He doesn't owe anybody money. I feel bad. I testified Edus Sheker. And through that Hoda'ah, he is being Mechayiv himself as an Eid Zomim. He's saying, I'm making myself an Eid Zomim and I want to pay half of the money that I tried to be mechayiv the nidon. So that's the case. So says Gemara, that doesn't work either, because that's not true. If you would come and try to do that, Beis Din would not listen to you. Kol kaminei kivin shigit shuvein achazer magid. We have a klal in halacha in Hilchas Eidos that once you say testimony, you're not allowed to backtrack. You can't back out of the testimony if it's contradicting your first testimony. We dash im lo yagid v'nasav anod. The Torah's makbid on the Haggadah Rishona of the aid. This is a sugya in Masech Sanhedrin. Kivin sheyigid shuveinu chazer magid. So he can't back out and say, oh, I lied. It doesn't work. Ella, a fourth possibility. Ba'omer, he'adnu v'huzamnu b'beis din ploni. Now, they're not just coming to say, we lied. They're coming to say, we lied and we've already been caught in the lie. We've already been made Edom Zomim in another Beis Din, but only one of the Edom admits to that. The other one does not. So maybe that's the case where we're going to be Mechayiv, the aid that admits that he has already become an Eid Zomim, to pay his portion of that Eidos. But the other guy's not going to have to pay, because he never admitted that he became an Eid Zomim, and we have no evidence to it. So come on, delok Rabbi Akiva. Well, that must be assuming against Rabbi Akiva. Dik Rabbi Akiva amar afeinu mishalim al piatzmo. Well, we just said, we started today with saying that Rabbi Akiva holds that an Eid Zomim never has to pay based on his own admission, because it's a knaso, it's ainu mishalim al piatzmo. So if you're going to say that that's what Rabbi Yudom Rav meant, that's fine. It might be what he meant, but then that would be against Rabbi Akiva. You would be necessarily saying that he's going against Rabbi Akiva, which we'd rather not say. Ella, rather the case is, and this is the final suggestion, Ba'omer he'adnu v'uzamnu b'bezin ploni v'chu yavnu mamon, that not just stam were edim zomim, the other bezin has already had a gemar din against us to be mechayev as mamon, and in that case even Rabbi Kiva would say that if you're moda you're chayev to pay, because then it's not a hoda b'knas, it's a hoda b'mamon. Once there's an official psak of bezin, it turns from being a knas to being a chayev mamon. The psak of bezin is a chayev mamon. So if the guy is moda that we were caught as edim zomim and there was a psak din, a gemar din against us, so the guy who's moda will have to pay his portion. Of course he will. Now, Salka Daitachamina, Kivin Del l'chavri l'amatsim l'chayiv lei, iunami l'amachayiv, kamash mulan. I might have thought, since he can't be mechayiv the other guy, we're not going to be mechayiv him either, so kamash mulan, that we're going to be mechayiv him, even without his friend. New Mishnah now. Midinonu esish ploni, shegirish esishto, v'lonas l'ksubasa. A complicated case. A guy, the Edom testify that this man divorced his wife and has not yet paid her ksuba. And therefore, if the ksuba is $20,000, he owes $20,000 today. Then they're found out to be Edom Zomim. The man never divorced his wife, so he doesn't owe her ksuba. Now, says the Mishnah, but eventually he might. They might get divorced, or even if they don't get divorced, he might die before she dies. He might predecease her. So one way or the other, there might be a chiv ksuba here. So Edom are going to say, we weren't trying to cost him $20,000. We were just trying to get him to prepay a little bit. We were trying to get him to pay a little bit earlier, but we weren't costing him any money. On the other hand, she might have predeceased him, and they were trying to get him to pay early. So how exactly do we evaluate what they have to pay for this? What were they trying to cost him? So Omdin, we have to assess. Kama adam rotza litain b'ksubasa shalzu shim nisalman on esgarsha v'meisa yirushana baila. How much would a person be willing to pay for this woman's ksuba, taking the risk into account? Meaning, and the Gemara is going to discuss what exactly that means. How much a person is going to pay for her position in the ksuba? Meaning, if a woman says, look, I have a ksuba, my husband might owe me $20,000 one day if he dies first or if we get divorced, or he might owe me nothing. How much are you willing to pay me for this document? Okay, someone might be able to say, if $20,000, I'm willing to pay you $8,000 for it. Right? Someone might say something like that. But is that what we're talking about? That's what these Edom are going to have to pay? They weren't trying to make the woman lose her position in the ksuba. They were trying to make the man lose his position in the ksuba. So that can't be how we evaluate. So right away the Gemara says, Ketzad Shamin, how do we do this evaluation? It doesn't seem, the way the Mishnah expressed it, it doesn't seem that that would make any sense, that we would make him pay for her position in the ksuba. So we have two possibilities of over here how to do it, and at least this is the way Rashi and Tosos understand. Two possibilities. It could get very complicated, even with Rashi and Tosos, but it's certainly when you go beyond Rashi and Tosos. One possibility is that the Edom pay the amount of money that someone, Minashuk, a Stam guy, would give him for a field that was designated to pay her ksuba. Let's say the ksuba is worth $20,000. The guy's got a field that's worth $20,000, and that field is designated, set aside to pay her ksuba, and it's actually contractually, they have a deal that when it comes time to pay her ksuba, she's going to collect that field. And if she never collects her ksuba, he'll get to keep that field. And if she collects her ksuba in 10 years from now, the husband will enjoy the payros of that field for the next 10 years, and ultimately in 10 years from now, he'll give that field. How much would a person be willing to pay for that field, to take the husband's position in that field, where the person might have 10, 20, 30 years of payros and then have to give it up? The person might have to give it up tomorrow. The person might never have to give it up. So how much would he be willing to pay for that field? That's one way to assess it. The other way to assess it is to figure out the woman's position in the ksuba, how much someone would be willing to pay for the woman's position in the ksuba, the potential that she might get her ksuba paid whenever, or she might never get it. Like we said the case before, if the ksuba is a $20,000 ksuba, someone might pay her $8,000 for her position in the ksuba, and then pay the husband the difference. Pay the husband $12,000. The difference between the woman's position in the ksuba and the actual payment of the ksuba. Those are the two possibilities. So says the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Biba'al. Rav Chista says the first possibility. Rashi understands it. Biba'al means that a ki'ilu, a field that was designated for the payment of the ksuba, how much would someone pay the husband for that? Rav Nasa Mar Hoshi Amar, Bi'isha. No, we assess what a person would pay for the woman's position of the ksuba, and we give the difference. We give the difference between that and the full amount of the ksuba to the husband. Amrav Papa, Bi'isho b'ksubasa. Rav Papa says, I agree with that second model of how to assess it, but I just have to add that you don't also have to pay the amount of money that of the peros nichse melug that you're costing the husband. Because if you're saying that he's divorced, it means he's not able to eat from his wife's properties. He loses out on the peros nichse melug. Meaning we localize it dafka to the ksuba payment, to the primary ksuba payment, and we ignore the nichse melug element and the other money that's going to be lost by the husband by the fact that that we would have considered him to be divorced from today. So that's what Rav Papa adds. Beisha ubik subasa. If you really look into that, that's probably the hardest two lines of the entire Masecht, if you really go through it, but Daf Yomi, it's the advantage of Daf Yomi. Says the Mishnah, person testifies that this guy owes 1,000 zuz, and the money is due in 30 days from now. The guy says, I did borrow $1,000. Yeah, but it's due in 10 years from now, not in 30 days from now. So time value of money. We have to assess how much would a person be willing to pay to get a 9-year, 11-month extension on his loan. People are sometimes willing to pay money to get an extension on the loan. So that's what we have to assess. That's what they were trying to cost him. So says the Gemara now, as we said, between this Mishnah and the next Mishnah, five statements of Rav Yehuda in the name of his Rebbein. Here's the first one. Rav Yehuda says the name of Shmuel. Hamal des chaver le'esr shanim, shviyas misham taso. If a person makes a 10-year loan to his friend, Shmita will cancel the loan. He's not going to end up having to pay anything. Even though right now we cannot say lo yigos, meaning at the time that Shmita comes, the loan is not due. And normally we say the whole kunz of Shmita is you can't pressure him, you can't ask him for the money because Shmita has come. Well, anyway, I couldn't ask him for the money; it wasn't due yet. So the whole psukim of Shmita shouldn't apply over here. So vasili de lo yigos. No, this is something that ultimately you would have pressed him for the money. So the laws of Shemitah do apply, cancels the loan. Masav Rav Kana. So Rav Kana says, yeah, but then our Mishnah makes no sense. Omnim kama dem rotz liten view elav zuz biyoda bein liten mikan v'adam yom bein liten mikan v'ades hashanim. How do we make this assessment? How much money would a person be willing to pay to get a 9-year, 11-month extension on his $1,000? $999.99. That's how much a person is willing to pay to get that extension, because by getting that extension, he's not going to have to pay the $1,000, right? Meaning that extension means that he's never going to have to pay it. So v'yamet shviyus misham taso kulunami b'yishlum alei. If Shemitah cancels it, then you're trying to cost him the whole thing. You're trying to cost him the full $1,000. So amarava hachma eskinan b'maval mashkon and b'moser shtros of the beisdin. Now the case in our Mishnah might be one of the exceptions to Shemitah, a case where the laws of Shemitah don't apply. For example, a case where there was a mashkon involved, and when there's a mashkon involved, Shemitah does not cancel the loan, or a case where they gave over the shtaros to Bezin, that Bezin will do the collecting, the person doesn't have to do the collecting himself. That also, Shemitah doesn't cancel such a loan. Ditnan, hamaval maskun v'amosar shtaros of the Bezin, ein mashmitin, that Shemitah doesn't cancel such a loan when you're mosar shtaros of the Bezin, or if you're malval maskun. Rashi understands that the din of mosar shtaros of the Bezin and the din of Puzbol are the same din. Hillel was misakein that Moser Shtros of the Bezdin should be affected all the time. And that's why in the Nusach HaPruzbul it says that I am hereby being Moser, my Shtros to Bezdin. So the way Rashi seems to understand is that Moser Shtros of the Bezdin is a din midrabanan, just like Pruzbul is a din midrabanan. Hillel was misakein this din of Moser Shtros of the Bezdin. Tosus Masech is Gittin quotes a drasha of the Sefri on the Pasuk that Malval Chaveru al Mashkon Moser Shtros of the Bezdin ain Mashmitin, which makes it sound like it's a din d'oraisa and not a din to Rabbanan. It could be, and most likely, the Rashba, others point out, Rashi also meant that Moser Shtros of the Bezdin is a din d'oraisa. When he says that Pruzbul works midin Moser Shtros of the Bezdin, it means Hillel was Masakin to institutionalize Moser Shtros of the Bezdin. It's the same mechanism. It's the same thing. It's just that not everyone would have thought of this. Not everyone would have known of all of the legal ways to get around Shemitah. So Hillel came up with a way that everyone does it. And if everyone does it, then you're never going to have to worry about Shemitah. Tosfos, however, holds that they're two different things. Moser Shtros of the Bezdin and Pruzbul are two different things. And his raya is the Mishnah Shviyas says Moser Shtros of the Bezdin, and then it says the din of Pruzbul as two separate bavos in the Mishnah. Moser Shtros of the Bezdin works min haTorah, and Pruzbul is only midrabanan. What's the difference? So the Ritva explains, and the Ramban explains it more elaborately, that someone who's Moser Shtros of Mamish LeBezdin, he literally gives his shtaros to Bezdin, Shemitah definitely counts as well, and that's a din d'oraisa. The kunz of Prusbul is you don't actually have to be Moser Shtros of the Beis Din. You could say it's Kimi Shemoser Shtros of the Beis Din. It's as if, we'll view it, but you don't have to physically take your Shtaros and deliver them to the Beis Din. And it still cancels the loan. So that's the that was the institution of Hillel. That's what Hillel's contribution was when he was Mesakein Prusbul. There's also Sugi, Mesakein's Gittin, how he was allowed to do that. If we have a din that Shemitah cancels, how is he, by what mechanism is Hillel allowed to uproot Dine Torah? In the Reform Movement, this Hillel was a very popular figure. Oh, you have a din min haTorah? Oh, you could just change the din. You could change Shabbos and Kashrus and Taras HaMishpacha. Whatever doesn't work for you, you could change. So the Gemara already asked the Kasha how he was allowed to do this. That's the whole sugya in Maseches Gittin. Ikad Amri Amr Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel. Another version of Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel is Hamal Es Chaver Le'Asar Shanim Ein Shvis Misham Taso. Shemitah does not cancel the loan. The Avgav Dasi Lidei Lo Yigos. Even though it's one day going to get to the point of Lo Yigos, Hashemiah Lo Karina Be Lo Yigos. Right now it's not Lo Yigos, so Shemitah is totally ineffective. Amrav Kanaf and Nami Tanina. Omdim Kama Dom Rotsu Litein. Our Mishnah is a raya because our Mishnah assumes that there's a difference between that we have to assess the difference between having to pay now and having to pay in 10 years from now. But if Shemitah actually cancels the loan, you would have to pay that difference is the full amount. So Rava says, nah, it's not a raya. We might be talking about one of the cases where you can get around Shemitah. In those cases, Shemitah doesn't cancel the loan. So it's just the exact same conversation in reverse. That was all number one. Now, statement number two of Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel, unrelated. V'am Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel, ha'omer l'chavero al menas shalot tishamteni shviyas, shviyas mishametas. If someone lends money and he says, you know, the Shemitah thing is really inconvenient for me, I don't like this idea that you're not going to have to pay me back, so we're making a condition that Shemitah will not cancel the loan. Well, Shemitah still cancels the loan. Says Mar, le'emek sabar Shmuel, masna mas shkosav betorahu. Shmuel must assume that this is an example of making a tenai against the Dine Torah. You can't make a Tanai against the Dine Torah. V'kol masa mashkotz b'Torah, Tanai batel. If you try to make a Tanai against the Dine Torah, the Tanai is going to be batel. So that's why it's not going to work. But wait a second, are you sure Shmuel holds that way? We had a different case where a person makes a sale or buys something and says, this is on condition that the dinim of ona'a, of overcharging or undercharging, shouldn't apply. Rav omer yesh lo alav ona'a, Shmuel ein lo alav ona'a. Rav says, you can't make a tonight to undo ona'a. Ona'a is a din d'oraisa. Shmuel says, yes, you can. You can make a tonight to get around ona'a. So isn't this a stira in Shmuel? On the one hand, Rav Yudah Amar Shmuel tells us you can't make a tanai to get around Shemitah, but you can make a tanai to get around Hana'a. What's the difference? So Yitmar Allah, Amar Avanan, Didim, Farshin, Minei to Shmuel. Shmuel explained, Al Menash She'ein L'cha Alai Hana'a, Ein Lo Alav Hana'a. If you say that Al Menas, that you shouldn't have any Hana'a complaints against me, so then there's no Hana'a, there can be no Hana'a complaints, he can't sue him. Al Menas She'ein Bo Hana'a. But if you say it in a lashon that there shouldn't be ona'a, well, you don't have the right to declare there shouldn't be ona'a. Hare yesh bo ona'a. So then there is ona'a. Meaning it all depends how you word it. If you word it in a way where you're saying that the dinim of ona'a, we shouldn't push each other on the dinim of ona'a, so that's a personal agreement not to push each other. You're acknowledging there are dinim of ona'a, you're just agreeing not to push each other on it. But you're making almanas that there isn't ona'a. Well, no, you can't do that. There is such a din called ona'a. And the same would be true by Shemitah. It's an exact parallel. Hachnami, al menash lo tishamteni b'shviyas, ain't shviyas misham taso. Al menash that you shouldn't forgive the loan at Shemitah, or you shouldn't ask for the loan to be forgiven at Shemitah, then Shemitah is not mishamit. Al menash lo tishamteni shviyas, but al menash that Shemitah shouldn't work, then shviyas misham taso. Shemitah does work. He can't make such a tonight. Tana, hamalves chaveru stam, If a person lends somebody money stam without setting a date that it has to be paid, you're not allowed to ask for the money within 30 days. So we originally assumed that this is only if they went through the trouble of writing a shtar. Why would the guy, the borrower, go through the expense and the bother of writing a shtar if he was only, this loan was only going to be a one-day loan, it was only going to be for a short amount of time? He would only go through that bother if it was going to be a 30-day loan. Aval malva al peh lo. But if it's a milva al peh, if it's a loan that was done verbally without a shtar, then there's no 30-day minimum. Amalei Rav, Hachi Amar Chavivi. Rav said, you know, Rav Chia said as follows, Echal Amalva Bishtar, Vechal Amalva Alpeh. That this 30-day minimum applies both by a milva bishtar as well as a milva alpeh. Tani nami hachi, and we have a brice that supports that, a malva es chavir ustam, einu rashi letova pachas mishloshim yom, echad amalva bishtar, vechad amalva alpeh. Whether you write a shtar or not, 30 days is the minimum. Armle Shmuel Rav Masna lo tesev akareich adam farshes lo lahashmeita. He said, I don't want you to sit down until you explain the following. Minoha mil sadam rabban amalvas chaver stam in rashi tov pachs mishlosh miyom echal mal bishtar echal mal vapeh. Where do they get this din from that there's a 30-day minimum on you're not allowed to ask for your money back within 30 days? If there, you know, if there's an agreement and they set a time, the loan is due at time X, so then of course you're not allowed to ask for the money until that time. But if there's no agreement, why can't I ask for it the next day? You know, a guy borrows a dollar from me to buy a soda or something. I can't ask for it the next day, right? That was the minig in yeshiva. You know, the next day he's supposed to pay back the money. Minig was that they don't pay back, but if he would, the minig he's supposed to pay back the next day. So I'm late. So where do you get 30 days from? Dichsiv karva shnas hasheva shnas hashmita. That the shnas hasheva, the shnas hashmita approaches. Well, mimash v'shnemar karva shnas hasheva in yodei shi shnas hashmita. Isn't that redundant? It says Shnas HaSheva. Of course, that's Shnas HaShmita. El Matam Lomer Shnas HaShmita. What are we adding with that extra phrase? Lomer Lecha, Yesh Shmita Acher Shei Kazu. There's another mini Shmita. Just like in Shmita, you can't ask for your money back, there's another mini Shmita. Ve'ezu, what's the mini Shmita where you can't ask for your money back? Zu HaMalvas Chavir Stam, Shein Rashi Yitov, Apox Mishloshim Yom. There's the first 30 days after you lend somebody money where you're not allowed to ask for the money back. That's a mini Shmita. It's not a real Shemitah, because it doesn't cancel the loan, and the loan is ultimately going to have to be paid back, but in those 30 days, you're not allowed to ask for the money. And that's a Shemitah year, but it's a 30 days, it's not a year. Yeah, Damar Mar, Shloshim Yom B'Shana, Chashav Shana. 30 days in a year counts as a whole year. So that's why the Chazal have such an expression in the third paragraph of Basra, that Shloshim Yom B'Shana is Chashav Shana. They also have Yom Echad B'Shana is Chashav Shana, but the assumption is that that's not what we're referring to over here, that it would be Shloshim Yom. Now the Rishonim quote from Rabbeinu Tam, that this din of Stam Halva'a Shloshim Yom is not only by Halva'a, but it's also by a She'ela. That Stam She'ela Shloshim Yom. What's the difference between Halva'a and a She'ela? Halva'a is money, She'ela is an object. So I borrow a book from you, so the stam, 30 days, you're not allowed to ask for it back. That's what Rabbeinu Tam explains. And they explain that's why the Gemara in Chulin says that a talis she'ula b'toch shloshim yom is pater mitzitzis. First 30 days that you borrow a talis, it's pater mitzitzis. Dechsiv ksuscha, it has to be your ksus, and a stam she'ela is shloshim yom. Once it's 30 days have passed, then it's beyond stam she'ela, so mela becomes like yours, and it's chayiv mitzitzis. That's the question, why it is that if a person borrows a talis from a shul, why it is that it's chayiv and tzitzis at all, or if it should be chayiv and tzitzis at all, how did they set up the system where it's not a borrowed talis, but it actually is some sort of chiyuv? Because if it's pater from tzitzis, you shouldn't be allowed to make a bracha on it. So then the Rishonim say, no, the reason shloshim yom pater mitzitzis is because it's normal to borrow up until 30 days. Beyond 30 days, it's not the normal to borrow. That is Shitas Rabbeinu Tam. However, many Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam, and they say, no, Stam Halva'a is Shloshim Yom. Stam She'ela is not Shloshim Yom. Stam She'ela, you're allowed to ask even less than 30 days. Why? So a very simple svara. When you lend somebody money, so imagine, someone asks you, I need to borrow a significant sum of money, and you mark the bills somehow. You mark exactly which bills. You give him the envelope with all the bills. And then he comes back a year later and returns to you the same envelope, never opened, with all those bills in it. You're happy or you're upset? Well, okay, you're happy to get it back, but you're upset. What did I have to give you all this money for? You're just holding on to the money? No, milva lahotza nitna. I gave it to you so that you can use it to invest, to do whatever, but you're just going to hang on to the money? You're just going to keep the money? No, it's lahotza nitna. But a she'ela? If I lend you my lawnmower or something, my snowblower, I don't expect that you're then going to invest with it and send that. No, you're not allowed. It's not lahotza nitna. The whole reason stam alva is shloshim yom is because I got to give you some time to do something with the money and then get it back and pay me back. But a she'ela, I don't have to give you any time. When you're done, you need to use it today? Good, use it today. And then give it back to me. So stam she'ela, we assume, is not shloshim yom. Not like the Rabbeinu Tam. So the majority of Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Vam Rav Yehuda Merav in the second wide line.